Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. My name is Omar Cumberbatch. I'm your host. And today we have an awesome show for you. Today's guest is Holly Kenley. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist and author of 5 recovery books. Her newest release is a novel entitled Another Way. The core message of Another Way centers around the concept of self-worth, empowering readers with a process for cultivating their worth and for making healthy decisions based on their unique levels of readiness. Holly, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Omar. I am so appreciative of being on your show, so thank you for having me, and I am really, really well.
Great, great. Listen, I appreciate having you on the show. I reached out and found out a lot of people are dealing with the issues of self-worth, and I really think that has a great connection to health and wellness, so we're going to be really looking forward to all your insight into this topic. I'm really appreciative of you being on the show.
Well, thank you so much, Omar, and, you know, I can't wait to dive into this because I think it's a topic that oftentimes we don't think about how much our sense of worth, our sense of how much we matter, how much we value ourselves. I know we don't typically think about how that contributes to our overall wellness. So I hope we get people motivated. I know that's the name of your show, so we want to get them motivated to be thinking about their wellness and to be making healthy choices that contribute to that wellness.
Absolutely. You're 100% right. I've done a lot of health coaching, and everyone thinks it's about food. The food part of it has such a small part of the equation, and this particular topic is way, way bigger. I mean, I didn't realize that in the beginning, so I'm not going to even lie. I thought it was all about foods as well. So as I grew, finding out this is right what we need to hear. So I'm going to let you jump into it. But at first, I just want to just get the audience a little bit acquainted with you just to give us a little bit of background how you got to this point there.
Sure. I'd love to do that. I started out actually as a young girl. I did not have a good sense of self-worth. There are a lot of reasons for that. I'll just kind of briefly say that part of it had to do that I was the second child of 4 children, and so I was kind of fell into that peacemaker, people-pleaser type of child. However, I was very shy and very introverted, and so it was a struggle for me. And also, my birthday fell late in the year, and so I was kind of straggled behind, kind of lagged behind other kids in my class socially and physically and such. And then my environment that I grew up in was kind of chaotic and a lot of issues going on with an addictive family system. And so there were some struggles there as well. However, I was introduced to music early on in my life. My father was a musician and a composer, and very early on, I mean, I'm talking about like age 4, I was introduced to piano and then later on to other instruments. And I made this connection, Omar, that if I invested myself into something that gave me a return, and for me this was music, that I felt better about myself. And so even though I was young, I obviously have never forgotten that, and it was a concept that I returned to time and time again over my life. And certainly I had my detours and struggles as well. But I always remembered that is that when I invested into something that I got a return on it, that I then in turn made healthier choices. I graduated from high school and went on to college and majored in French and music, and then became a teacher kind of I had to do something. I needed to earn a living, and I had this, you know, degree in French and music, but I taught English. I actually loved doing that, Omar. I loved my career as a middle school and then as a high school teacher. And then in the late 80s, I started leading some lay support groups for women, and around a particular issue. It happened to be, at that time, we called it premenstrual syndrome, or PMS, which was later re-identified as PMDD. But from that experience, which, again, I loved empowering women, helping them to improve their lives, I decided to go back to graduate school in the early 90s and get a degree in psychology and become a licensed marriage and family therapist so that I had the tools that I could help other people. And then that career led into my writing career. And I do work in the field of psychology mainly now as an author and a speaker and a workshop presenter. And I, you know, feel like I can help people, empower people in that respect.
That's great. I mean, I noticed that, just so the audience knows, I read the book and you're an excellent author. Very interesting to see, because I blog and I could never write a novel, but you've done clinical papers, you've done, you know, recovery books. How was it so different writing a novel? Because I think it's so different, in my opinion. I mean, it might come really easy to you because you're an excellent writer. What was the difference? Like, how did that transpire?
Well, thank you for picking up on that, Omar. yes, thank you for alluding to the fact that I'd written these recovery self-help books before, and that was a very comfortable and natural venue for genre for me to be writing in. With Another Way, I really wanted to write this message about self-worth and basing your decisions on everyone's individual unique levels of readiness. And it is targeted towards youth, tweens to teens. However, Omar, I've gotten great feedback from adult audience as well, and even them utilizing the tools in it for discovering, defining, and determining one's worth. But I thought, how can I relate to youth? How can I connect with them? And so even though it's fiction, is that I took the conversations that I had with kids over an almost 30-year span of teaching, middle school and then high school, and then some anonymous narratives, of course, of young people that I had as clients in therapy. And I took their conversations and I embedded those and integrated those into this work of fiction. So although the characters are fictional, as I've said, the conversations are real. They are absolutely real, and they're based on real individuals. And so I set it in a non-denominational church because I had to speak. I wanted my voice and the therapeutic lessons about worth to come in through a natural voice, a natural way. So I speak through Rick Summers, who is the youth pastor, and articulate and embed these life-changing lessons about worth in this natural forum of these students that he is leading and guiding and redirecting them, helping them by giving them tools to redirect their lives in a healthy way through these lessons that he imparts in this youth group. So it was a fascinating project to take on, and incredibly rewarding in the respect that I really felt the characters come alive. It reminded me of so many amazing young people that I worked with and was able to kind of bring them to life again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you could definitely see that in your writing, and I'm glad that you made me aware of who the character you were depicting is, because that makes the whole book a lot clearer as well. Which one of the characters you might have been, but it makes sense that you were the head pastor. So, it was a very good read, and I definitely wanted to, touch on, how did your background, like, besides, I know you touched on a little bit, playing in discovering and thinking about writing about self-worth.
Yes. As I said, Omar, is that, just that's something that I struggled with as a young person growing up. And it's also something that I had in so many conversations with young people and adults as well, is, Omar, just it with what they would say to me is, you know, Mrs. Kenley or Holly, I don't feel valuable, or I don't feel like I matter. I don't feel important. And of course, you know, as a teacher, I would try to connect with them in a healthy way with boundaries. I could only, you know, of course, influence in a certain way as their teacher. As a therapist, it was a little bit different. But helping them to make those connections that they had a choice over their worth. And this is a concept that is very, it almost shakes people when they first hear that about, well, what do you mean? I have a choice in my worth. And I know we're going to talk more about that and break that down. But to think about that, wait a minute, I don't have to give my worth away, or I don't have to allow other people, places, and things to define it. And I want to put out there that that's kind of a natural thing that we all do, that young people and adults as well. But when someone presents them with that, I present them with that concept in the book in another way, or when I was talking to students or clients, and believe me, a lot of these, and I know you probably are well aware of this, Omar, as well as our listening audience, is that, you know, so many individuals have endured horrific injuries and injustices of all mm-hmm. kinds. And yet to say to them, you have a choice, you can make that decision, you have the power to start to invest into yourself. There's no one that can stop you from doing that. And I will show you how to do that. But it's a choice. And you know, when you talk about motivation, Omar, and I love that word, mm-hmm. is that that's what it takes. It takes that motivation to say, I'm going to make the decision. I'm going to make the choice mm-hmm. to start thinking differently today. And if I can start thinking differently today, I can start doing differently today.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, that's probably the hardest thing. I mean, a lot of people obviously struggle with, you know, some kind of traumatic experience, or like you said, an injustice. Like, how do they start? Like, how do they begin? You know, that's something, I know that's your expertise. Can you fill some of the audience in on how you can actually get something like this in the right direction?
I would love to, Omar, and I do want to say that some of the characters in Another Way, I purposely put them in there. I put, you know, Sharifa in there. I put Tanisha in there. Amanda to some degree, of course, as well. I put Malik and Jordan. I put them in there because I want them to hear from these young people that if they can do it, that if these characters can do it, and again, these are based on real-life characters that have had different experiences happen to them, that the reader can do it as well. So, and I share that because many times, you know, whether it's a book or whether it's a movie or a TV show, knowing that somebody else lived this journey, knowing that somebody else lived this trauma, this injustice, this injury, and was able to make that shift, that's helpful and encouraging and motivating in and of itself. Through those characters, and I'll just kind of break it down into two or three things about where to start. Let me just back up for a minute and say this. If we don't pay attention to the voids in our lives and the needs that are created out of unfortunate life experiences, out of injuries and injustices, we don't move from a worth-driven place. We move from a want-driven or a need-driven place, and that only makes sense. If we were abandoned by a parent, we're going to have a huge void in our lives, and we're going to be seeking out and searching out, and many times it's not consciously, but unconsciously searching for people, things, even places, other external sources to fill that void and that need. So I just really need to put that out there, is that, of course, our worth is affected, and we navigate from this need or want-driven place. Now, what happens with that is, and I'm going to get to the good part in just a second, but this is important, Omar, mm-hmm. because if that is the case, then typically what happens is that we look to external sources that are temporary fixes. They're artificial mm-hmm. in nature, and they're unhealthy. And that can be anything from a substance, you know, embracing mm-hmm. alcohol or drugs or whatever, or it can also, of course, be unhealthy relationships. And so, mm-hmm. and Amanda, the character, and a couple of the other characters as well, in another way, again, Tanisha is a really good one in the girls group who really talk about this, how the voids in their lives drew them into a pattern of behaviors and relationships to fill those voids. So when we're want-driven or need-driven, we, number one, turn to temporary or artificial or unhealthy fixes. Number two is that we oftentimes turn to relationships, as I've alluded to. And what's so sad and tragic about that is that it puts unrealistic expectations, not only on the partner or the spouse or the girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever, but it puts unrealistic expectations on the relationship itself. And then thirdly, mm-hmm. when we move from a want or need-driven place, we give away our power. We give away our worth because we're navigating from this place of low self-esteem and self-worth. So we give it away trying to get it fixed or assuaged or to feel, of course, to feel better because it's so painful to be in that place. So, mm-hmm. I want to share that because a lot of the characters present with these different situations and they've turned to these other kinds of behaviors. So, now, where does someone start, Omar? I mean, I'll just put out about three things here. First mm-hmm. of all, as we've already talked about, is that there has to be a willingness. And, you know, we have to make that choice that, you know, we don't want to feel this pain anymore. We don't want to be in this place anymore. And we have a choice about how we can invest into ourselves. We have to believe in that. We have to trust in that. And I know that's scary and that's frightening. Mm-hmm. And some people don't have any reason to believe in that. But we're going to ask them to just receive that and to start investing into themselves. The first thing that individuals can do is to get support. Now, people might say, well, Holly or Omar, you know, I don't have the resources. There is so much support online, you know, through self-help books, through another way. That's why I wrote another way. But there's also, mm-hmm. we know, so much information online and self-help groups and things like that. Omar, after I went to college and went away, and when I got my first teaching job, I was talking to an older woman. I was, you know, in my late 20s, and I remember kind of just talking about my family and how difficult it was. And I remember this older woman said to me, "Well, Holly, have you ever been to Al-Anon?" And I didn't even know what that was. You know, I had no clue. I didn't know about addiction and, you know, family systems of addiction. That was the beginning. That was my first step in educating myself and becoming aware. And I will never forget that first meeting that I went to. And this older woman went with me. And I felt like everybody's story was my story. And that was the beginning of my first step into wellness. And so I know it can be scary. There was no cost. There was, you know, they met, these meetings were all over town. And so just if you've got some deeply embedded injuries or injustices, to start looking at healthy sources to heal those. That is important. Number two, mm-hmm. is to, and the characters in another way, Tanisha talks a lot about this, and Monica, is to let go, release, forgive. There are a lot of words that talk about this process of letting go, releasing, and forgiving your past, your pain, the people who have injured you, harmed you, and along that, with that, forgiving yourself if you need to. Now, people say, well, Holly, that's easier said than done. I understand that. I've worked in this field. I know it's hard, but I wanted people to hear this. I want the listening audience to hear this. You can either stay bitter or you can get better. And
that's
making it right for stay bitter or get better. And so part of the process mm-hmm. is going through that forgiveness. And in Chapter 7, I lay it out really well and the different ways to do that. And then lastly, I would say, Omar, again, is to believe and trust that you have the power to change how you feel about yourself. And in another way, I've laid it out very carefully, three steps, how to discover, define, and determine your worth. And again, if we have time, we'll get into that. But that it is a process, and there are exact steps in how to take that road and how to get there.
Yeah, no, I think we should definitely touch on those three steps. I just wanted to really quickly go backtrack a little bit. How's it different for youth, teenagers, adolescents, as in comparison to adults? Because I know in my head, I know a lot of adults who are like, I'm too old to change and I can't get out of this mindset. Can you describe some of the differences in that perspective and maybe debunk the myth that it's like you're too old to get out of that mindset?
Oh yeah, no, we're never too old to change and to make that shift. I wouldn't be in this business if I didn't believe that. And Omar, the most elderly client I ever had, I think he was in his mid to late 70s, and he actually came in to see me for kind of an issue around relapse. But what we ended up working through was his sexual abuse as a young boy. And, you know, that's a whole nother story, but it was one of the most phenomenal experiences of my life, is working with this elderly gentleman who just completely shifted and changed his whole being and came out the other end of our long journey together as a whole and well individual. So it is just never, ever too late to change. Sometimes we just need the tools to do so, and that's what my mission is about. As far as self-worth is concerned, what's so different about young people and older people, although I do see this changing, Omar, in our technological age, but first let me say that with young people, it's only natural that they are strongly influenced by their external sources. They look outside of themselves for their sources of worth because they want to fit in, they want to belong. It's just part of, you know, their adolescents and tweens and teens and children and young adults as well. We want to feel like we belong, we want to be liked, and we want to be loved. So we want to blend in and we want to do what everybody else is doing. And so in order to get that validation, we look externally. And again, that's normal and that's natural. What I have been really looking at, Omar, is that as adults, as we grow and mature, what we typically tend to do, and not that external sources aren't important to us, because we all want to look nice and feel good and have nice things and so on and so forth, but we default back to our beliefs, our values, our relationships, you know, things that bring us more lasting and meaningful worth. Beliefs and all that kind of thing. But what's been interesting to me to watch over this, I would say especially the past 10 or so years, as I do a lot of work in the area of cyberbullying and things like that, and technology and its influence and impact on us, is that we're becoming very much defined, even adults, by, you know, how many friends we have on Facebook and how many likes we have and how many followers we have. And so, you know, I really, as I've been talking about this topic to adults as well, is that I think it's something that we need to pay attention to, because even though that's important, especially those of us who are in a business where we have to put ourselves out there on the social media, that, again, that we don't allow that, the numbers, the followers, the tweets, the posts, the tech, to define who we are. And as a person in this field, I have some days just sit back, Omar, and take a pulse on myself and say, even though I don't have thousands of followers, I know that what I'm doing is important. And I know that, you know, so.
I love that concept that you just brought up, because I find myself reverting back to my teenage years too, with this, like, put a post out and see how many people, like, are validating what I put out there. And I got to sometimes step back and say, okay, you know what? Some people might like it or not. And like you said, you're doing a great service to people. And some people just might not like it, you know, or click a button that says they approve of it. And you got to get past that. So it's funny how you did say adults are, you know, hooked on this kind of stuff too, because, like, I feel like I'm going backwards. So,
yeah.
I'm sorry to cut you.
No. I thank you for, you know, I could talk on and on. But you see, again, you're bringing out a really important, validating a really important point, and showing how that's connecting to your life. And so, again, what we need to do, even as adults, is just stop and pause and realize that we, again, have a choice. We can allow external sources to define who we are, or we can say, wait a minute, I know what's important to me, and I know what I want to invest in as far as what's important to me, and I know what contributes to my worth. And that's where we're getting to the point, is because how we feel about ourselves, again, and what contributes to our worth is going to impact the decisions that we make. So it's just this cycle that goes round and round.
Yeah, if you could expand on that point, that would be great. Like, how does it impact the decisions that we make, especially in health and wellness? I mean, I think that obviously wellness has a big umbrella, but it definitely does impact the way we make decisions across the board. So if you could expand on that topic, that'd be great.
Yes, I would love to do that. I want to back up, right before I do that, I want to put out just this little comparison, this little analogy I was thinking about a little earlier today. Omar, I think it's fascinating that many people, I think most adults and most people that are concerned about their financial security, they spend time, or they at least listen to different people, and they spend time planning for their monetary net worth. You know, they study it, they selectively invest into certain things, and then they soundly protect it and make sure that it's secure and it's safe. And we don't seem to have any problem with that concept, that we need to plan ahead and think ahead and again, securely plan for a monetary secure future. At the same time, we don't do that about our personal net worth, our personal self-worth. And again, that's understandable, because worth is an abstract concept, and we don't spend time consciously thinking about it. We only typically pay attention to it when it goes up, when it goes down. Okay, so I want to put that out there, because it's very normal, it's very natural, it's just kind of like it's not on our radar. So I share that because I want people to hear that it is something that we can deliberately put on our radar. And we must, if we're going to begin to make a change in the choices that we make. And so that's why I came up with this three-step process. And the first thing to do is in this thing, and I'll try to keep it short, in these three steps, is to do a fearless self-inventory. to just be still and pause and discover your worth. Now, what I mean by that is, and I've got these different tools in the book, circles and charts and things, and you can do it with anything, but to sit quietly and take some time and make a list of the people, places, and things and relationships, it can be anything, that are important to you. Because the things that are important to you are the things that you are investing in. You're investing your emotions, mm-hmm. your resources, your time, your energies. And here's the important piece, Omar, is that if you are getting a return on those investments, then that is going to contribute to your self-worth. But if you are not, it's going to obviously deplete from your self-worth. And then depending on that, whether it's contributing to yourself, let's back up for a second. I'll give an example. Okay, mm-hmm. let's take Tyrell in the book. Tyrell mm-hmm. is a young man who has had a rough go of it up till about eighth grade. Single mom and a grandmother raising him. Dad abandoned the family at an early age. He's got a lot of anger in him. He's making some poor choices. Finally, at eighth grade, he's gotten himself into some problems. And so the things that he's investing into, these loser friends and these different other behaviors that he's participating in, are not helping him, and they're certainly not contributing to his self-worth. So he goes and he talks to Rick Summers, the youth pastor, and Rick basically says to him, you have a choice. You can start investing into things that are going to give back to you and that are giving to you and contributing to your worth, or you can continue going down this other path. Tyrell, and it's over a period of time, he takes on this challenge that Rick gives him. He changes his mind. He starts investing into himself, and he starts to get a positive return academically, athletically. And what does he do then? He continues to start making healthy choices because he likes mm-hmm. how he feels.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense.
And it's a cyclical relationship.
Mm-hmm. Definitely makes a lot of sense. I mean, no, nobody that likes to do anything that has no positive benefit. Unless it's, you know, you just don't know any better as well. And that's, I guess, one of the interesting things about that concept as well.
Yes. And it just, I get so passionate about this, because if we want to return on our worth, we have to look at how and where and in whom we're investing ourselves. And so, again, that's why, you know, we take step one to discover who and what it is. I kind of jump to step two, which is defining it, where I have in the book the characters and individuals, the readers, make two charts. And you break it down into the people, places, and sources that are giving back to you and the people, places, and sources that aren't. And that is a huge mm-hmm. wake-up call for people. But it's an important one, because you say, okay, you know what? I've been investing into this relationship, and this is how, like Amanda does with Blair in the book, just giving all of herself to him, and then not getting back in return what she wants or needs. And what happens is then her self-worth just plummets. And mm-hmm. the important message with her in the book is, and in this whole process, is that, again, you have the power to change that. You have the power to let go of those unhealthy pieces and places and people in our lives that are not lifting us up, that are not contributing to our sense of mattering or value, and we can move forward. And then the third piece is where I call it determining your worth. You know, Omar, I include myself in this. It's so easy to talk our talk. It's hard work mm-hmm. to walk it. each and every day, making that commitment. And so it helps, just as you and I know as adults, to have an action plan. I mean, we set goals, and those goals don't get accomplished unless we break it down. And so this third piece, in another way, is showing young people in a very simple format how to have an action plan, how to have boundaries. Boundaries are healthy, and how to go about step by step walking their talk and living it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard because there's peer pressure. And I, you know, I talk about that, and yet it can be done. I've seen it done, and I know it can be done.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought up the idea of hard work, too, because I know that the Amanda character did have a setback. You know, she was very gung-ho going in, had her little setback, and then she picked it up again. And I think that was a great concept to add in the book because, you know, like you said, it's hard work, and it's not going to be easy, and you're going to, just like in everything in life, you're going to have setbacks, and you're going to have to reassess and keep moving forward. I don't know if you want to expand on that a little bit, but to just even kind of validate that idea that we do have to go through some struggles with that, and it's not going to be easy, you know.
I hope, and I know, Omar, you read Another Way, and this is just so important to me, and it's one of the reasons, I don't think I've mentioned this, but I originally wrote the manuscript for Another Way 20 years ago, and it was a whole different book, really. I tried very hard to get it published. At that time, my daughter was turning 15 and going into high school, and I really wanted to write. This would have been my second book. I wanted to write something that would, you know, empower her and young people. And I was getting into the field of psychology at that time as well. And I worked really hard, and I couldn't get it published. And that manuscript it disappeared. The computer and the disks and everything else on it disappeared. And it resurfaced. My older sister had a copy of it in 2009. I was helping her move. And we were unpacking some boxes, and she said, "Holly, do you want this?" And I said, "What is that?" And she said, "It's a copy of that manuscript, Rachel." I had entitled it Rachel. That was my daughter's middle name. And I said, "Oh, my gosh." Anyway, I took it, and I tucked it away, and I brought it out again in 2013, and I didn't have time to really spend too much time on it. I was finishing up some media on a different book. But later in the year, I did pull it out, and I realized the whole thing had to be written. And I share that for exactly what we're talking about, Omar, because I'm certainly a different person in a different place than I was 20 years ago. And working with students for over almost 30 years as a teacher and then as a therapist, I did not want to preach or teach or judge or put any kind of evaluation or judgment into the book. And I have to say, it did have that before. And so I wanted young people to know that, you know, I have stumbled and fallen. Kids everywhere stumble and fall. And that's part of the learning process. That's part of our life experiences. And at the same time, if you want to choose another way, if you want to choose another path, that at any point in time, it is possible. And that's why I created this novel and the steps and the lessons within it, and that it is ours for the choosing. And through the characters, through compassion, and yet accountability, because we do have to have accountability to ourselves and responsibility to ourselves, that there is a compassionate and healing path to do that, to accomplish that.
Yes, absolutely. I just wanted to mention also, that's a beautiful story of synchronicity, and that's why Sex and Both would be coming out at this time, and with that element of like compassion and non-judgmental views, the book is definitely going to hit a lot more of the audience that you're intending on doing. So it was just meant to be, you know.
I trust in that, Omar, completely. I am so thankful that first book never got published. Oh my gosh, I think I would have never, you know, come out of and claimed it as my own. So,
really?
Thank you. I trust that as well. I don't believe in reaching people through judgment and condemnation. That's not my truth, and I don't believe that it resonates with others as well. So I wanted to make it inviting and exciting as well and relevant. So I'm glad you picked up on that. Thank you.
Oh no, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'm sure just by knowing teenagers, I don't think that your daughter probably would have appreciated that style of writing at that time in her life either. So.
Oh, no way. Oh, no, she let me know loudly and clearly that wouldn't have worked. So, it's, a protective mom at the time, but I didn't have the psychology background behind me and just, you know, my own experience and years as a, even though I taught for a number of years at that point, not nearly, hearing from young people and seeing what they needed, what they wanted and needed to hear and how to really connect with them in a safe and relevant manner.
Right, exactly. You know what, I do remember portions of the book, and I know that worth is a big concept, obviously, in the book, but you do touch on the idea of readiness and being ready for certain situations. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Oh, thank you, Omar. Yes, I almost sometimes forget about that, and it's so important. Again, kind of staying away from a judgmental attitude, but and having accountability. I thought, how can I go about this? And what have I learned from young people? And what have they taught me? And how can I connect? And again, I wanted to make this book very open so that diverse groups and cultures and ethnicities would connect. It was so important to me, Omar, that it be inclusive. And I want to put that part out there because I wrote it this way so that whatever individuals face or persuasions or lack of are, that they would be able to pick this up and integrate it into their culture or their belief system. So I wanted to put that out there. So with that, wanting to make it inclusive, I thought, how do I connect this with worth? And it just connected with me that let me take Chloe in the book. Chloe is the main character. Chloe is searching for answers and for guidance. She doesn't have a strong faith or anything like that. She's from a pretty strong family unit, but there isn't anything that kind of pulls her in one direction or another as far as making her decisions about sexual activity or drinking or drugs or whatever the social influences might be. And she doesn't feel comfortable talking to her parents like most young people. And so she is anxious and excited about attending these lessons and these sessions on Another Way and getting some guidance and searching for some practices and principles from which she can learn from and incorporate into her well-being. Now, Chloe does respect herself. She does like who she is, and she does respect herself, which is, again, kind of a unique concept for a freshman going into high school. But there's some things that contribute to that readers can learn from. But she's also very open to learning about what else is out there and how to make decisions. So as she's learning about the concepts of Another Way and she's discovering what's important to her, she's defining what's important to her, her academics, her sports. She meets Tyrell right away, and he is very important to her. And as she's defining, which means, again, she's learning how much she wants to invest in herself into these things and understanding that how much she chooses to invest in herself, of herself, into Tyrell, into her school, then gives her back the information about whether she's ready or not to take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's take the relationship with Tyrell. She knows she cares about him very, very much. They're getting serious. At the same time, she knows that if she goes a certain distance with him, if she chooses to become very intimately involved with him, for her, that she's not ready to do that, because that's going to pull her into an arena and into an area of emotional investment that A, she's not quite equipped to handle, and B, mm-hmm. that's going to distract her and pull her away from other areas of her life that are super important to her and where she wants to go. Now, that may not be the case for someone else. It wasn't the case for Amanda, and Amanda chose a different path. So it's all about what's important to an individual, how they know that that's important, and basing their decision on how much they want to invest into that on their personal levels of worth, which correlates with their personal levels of readiness. And so in other words, you're not making a decision on what everybody else is doing. And the messages that come in from our external sources that say, well, if everybody else is doing it, then I must be okay to do that, when we then negate the idea that I'm not quite equipped yet. I'm not quite ready yet. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite prepared to accept or to take on what is going to go with that decision.
Right.
And this is where, Omar, I feel like as adults, as parents, as guardians, as mentors, as teachers, as counselors, that we fall short. Because this is a concept that I say at the end of the book in this section to the parents. The degree of access, exposure to, or consumption of anything is a predictor to the degree of consequence, positive or negative. Let me say that again. The degree of access or exposure to or consumption of anything is a predictor of the degree of consequence, positive or negative. And getting back to all of us that have an influence or are caregivers of our youth, we don't do a very good job of preparing them. They have access to everything, Omar. They have access to everything. And yet we don't prepare them for what the consequences are, positive or negative. And that's why, in another way, if I do nothing more than this, that I cause young people and their parents or guardians to pause and take inventory of their degree of access and how much they're preparing them for it. If I can do just that, I will have succeeded with this book.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a great way to put it, too. Yeah, it's a really good book, and I hope, again, my audience runs out and buys it. Because I think, it has many levels. And let me throw this as, our final question before I let you get an opportunity to tell people how to get the book. How does this relate to an adult? And, this is definitely a great book, and I think it's very influential for, young people. But what are the lessons that someone like myself can take from this book as well?
Okay, and thank you, Omar, for asking that. I appreciate that. I might be repeating myself just a little bit. But if any adult is out there listening and they're struggling with their self-worth, if they're feeling that, they don't matter, or that they're less than, or that they're inadequate, or they kind of fall short, I would ask them to think about how much importance they're putting on their external sources and that the messages that are coming from those external sources, and how much they're comparing themselves to this ideal that is constantly put in our faces. And if they would take the time to do an inventory of that, to take that, do that self inventory, and really take a brutal and honest look at how much influence that's having on them, and then go to the next step, and that say, what is it that's important to me? What is it that I find valuable? You know, make that second chart or shift. And if they will do that and identify that and start then investing into those, I mean, whether it's a relationship, whether it's their faith, whether it's their workout routine, it doesn't matter, whether it's their profession, if they will start investing into the things that are important to them and keep a pulse on what the return is that they're getting back. And if they do that work, they're going to feel differently. They're going to sense, one, that they have control. They have power over how they feel about themselves because they're defining it. And number two, they're going to feel that shift happen in feeling better about themselves.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I love the idea and the concept of investing in yourself. And I think that is going to go a long way to help a lot of people deal with a lot of the things that they're dealing with. I really, really love that concept. But I just want to definitely thank you again for being on the show. And I just want to give you an opportunity to just share how the audience can get in contact with you, how they can get this great book, you know, anything you have, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, anything you want to put out there, just so that we can get connected to you.
Thank you, Omar. The easiest way, and probably most economical, is through Amazon.com. Another way is available in a hard copy and as a Kindle. However, any bookstore can order it. It's through my publisher, Loving Healing Press, and they're with all the major distributors. So it may not be in a Barnes & Noble or a Borders or what have you, but an independent bookstores too. He's connected with all of the main distributors. So if you want to support your local bookstores, I certainly encourage that too. I would love to hear from people. I have on my website is my webmail contact information, holly@hollykenley.com, and Holly is with an I. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I Pinterest. You name it, most LinkedIn, most of the social networking sites, YouTube. So please connect with me. I have three blogs. Wellness with Holly is the one that I use most. But I have a Facebook page for Another Way. Please join me there. And I do posts geared a little bit more towards our younger audience there. But parents, guardians, and youth leaders and mentors, join me there. So lots of social networking places. And if you want to send me an email and you have a question, I promise I will get back to you, and I would love to hear from you.
Awesome, awesome. I got to get on the Facebook Another Way page. I saw you on the other one. I'm definitely going to find you and link up with you on that one. You know what? I think I want to throw one more question if you have a second.
Uh-huh, of course.
I would bring it around to, you know, your personal wellness regimen. What do you do? Like, what's your diet like? What's your exercise routine? just curious how you tie all this stuff together.
Yeah, absolutely, Omar. It is so important. Mind, body, and spirit, it's all connected. I have, you know, embraced a holistic kind of approach for.
Hello? Hello? I'm sorry, for some reason it looks like Holly might have dropped off. Well, I'll get all that information to you. What a great show. Yeah, I hope that Holly might pop back up. But if you, Holly, if you're there, just chime in. But I'm going to just talk a little bit about you. Yeah, this is a great book. I hope that the audience does run out and get it. Obviously, you can do a lot of stuff for teenagers and adolescents, but it does definitely have some lessons for adults and people who just want to make a change and a difference in their lives. I really appreciate her being on the show, and I hope everyone has gotten a lot of tips out of the show, and I think it's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity, and I appreciate her being such a wonderful guest. And if I guess Holly might be gone, but what I'll do, I'll definitely get on the blog and share that. I'm going to ask Holly off the record how she's going to incorporate wellness and her diet regimen and her exercise regimen and how she incorporates mind, body, and spirit. And I will blog about it and we'll talk about it so we can wrap that show up. But next week, our guest will be Karen Edgett. Karen is the founder of SunFriend, a wearable UV sun tracker that can detect the UV index of the sun in real time. I think it's a great topic, a great guest to have. We're rolling into the summer months, and the fact that one in five people is affected by skin cancer is something that I definitely want to get her on the show so we all will be prepared for our summer. Again, thank you, Holly. Loved having you as a guest. And this is the Wellness Ultimatum Radio. I'm your host, Omar Kovermatch, and appreciate you for listening. All right, have a good night.